them. You might run into a chicken. If you walk down the street in Houston, you might get run over. They're dirty. They're noisy. Crime. Now, of course, all these things we don't like about cities, they happen in Yoakum. Like, we have crime here. We might even have light pollution. I don't know if you know this, but the church shines really bright lights on the parsonage. I asked the deacons to angle them down. Yoakum can be dirty. There can be noise, you know. But in Yoakum, it's just different. I've had people ask me, like, aren't you nervous about being right next to the food pantry? You know, people that are homeless, people that are poor coming around. I'm like, no, because if they act up, I'll just call their cousin. You just know people. I do jail ministry. I see people arrested and in jail on the street, and they come give me a hug. That doesn't happen in Houston or Dallas. But in Revelation, and even today, why are millions and millions of people going to the city? Most of our graduates are going to graduate from here and go off to a city today, not just in Revelation. Why? Because there's something they can get there. There's something that draws them in, whether it's a job, career, wealth, money, health. There's so many appealing things about a city. Which brings us to what is John teaching us today. We move from the worst thing about a city to this. For John, Babylon is tempting, but not lasting. Babylon is tempting, but not lasting. What Autumn read for us today in Revelation 17 is actually a fulfillment of something that came earlier. We first got introduced to Babylon and this promise in Revelation 14:8. Revelation 14:8 says this, "Another angel, a second, followed, saying, 'Fallen, fallen is Babylon the great, and she who made all nations drink the wine of the passions of her sexual immorality.'" John told us a long time ago, Babylon is going to fall. But first, he shows us how great she is, how tempting she is. He paints this longer story. But let us be clear. For John and all his readers, Babylon doesn't begin here in Revelation. It begins way back in your Bible, almost at the beginning of the Bible. Genesis 11:4 talks about the city this way. "Then they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth.'" See, in the Bible, way before Abraham, way before Moses, way before David, there was the idea of this city. A city to rival God, a city that would reach to heaven. And so John in Revelation 17, by naming his city Babylon, is tapping into this ancient idea. And you can go read your sermon notes for the history of Israel, for the Jewish people. At times, Babylon was their worst enemy. You know, it's like the worst thing in the world for them. And then sometimes it was their greatest temptation. They just couldn't stay away from Babylon. They loved inviting them in. God's people have a love-hate relationship with this city. She is tempting. But what is John teaching us again? Babylon is tempting, but not lasting. And so that's how we're going to move through the text. We're going to identify the various temptations, and then we'll point out how it doesn't last, how it's an illusion, how it's fading away. And we can see our first temptation in verse 4. It says, "The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality." What's the first temptation in one word? Pleasure. Pleasure. John is describing a luxurious and alluring woman. I mean, his description today for us might be tame, but in the ancient world, this is downright pornographic. This is some PG-13 rated R stuff here. And so John is telling us something true. How many men are drugged down into hell by their eyes, by the pleasures they take in with their eyes? John himself talks about it this way in 1 John 2:16. "For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and the pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world." There is so much to see and taste and touch in this city. But how many men have engaged in adultery with this lie. Here's the lie they tell themselves. But I have needs. I have desires to be met. And the city says, I can meet those needs. I can meet those desires. I have everything you want and more. But the danger is never just in sexual acts. Well, what Jesus does is he takes our ethic from the outside of what we do and brings it to our heart. Jesus says it this way in Matthew 5, 28. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You might be here today and say, but I never touched her. I only looked. What John is teaching us and Jesus is teaching us is that is no excuse. Just the heart is enough. So to make it clear, the city Babylon draws people in with the promise of pleasure. I can give you what you want. I can give you what you need. I can give you what you crave. But is it going to last? No, it cannot last. Why? It's what John writes in verse 6 of our own passage. What does 17:6 say? Listen, it says, and I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, John's talking about himself, I marveled greatly. John's making it clear for us, this woman is no innocent girl. She's not a victim of her circumstances. She is a fatal temptress. The city lures men in and kills them. She hates Jesus. She hates his people. And just with these words, we should know that her fate is sealed. After all, what was promised way back in Revelation 6:10? Do y'all remember this? Way back in the seven seals about Jesus' authority? What does it say in Revelation 6:10? What happens if you mess with martyr blood? It says, they cried out with a loud voice, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? We forget this, but God is keeping track of every drop of martyr blood. We like to count our money. We like to count our vacation days. Jesus is keeping track of the precious blood of those who give their life for his name. But this city, Babylon, revels and indulges in the blood of martyrs. And so we can be assured she will be judged. She will face Jesus' vengeance. Her first temptation is pleasure. The city's only giving you what you want. That can't be that bad, right? You've got needs, right? But it won't last. But what is the second temptation? The first is pleasure. What's the second temptation in 17:12? And the 10 horns that you saw are the 10 kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. The first temptation is pleasure. What's the second temptation? Power. Our prostitute doesn't come alone. She's riding beast of royal power. And we know this is true. Many men lust after the flesh, what they can see, what they can touch. But how many men lust for what? Power. They seek it. They crave it. Men who say, I want to move mountains. I want to rule the world. Listen to the greatest king ever describe the lust for power. This is what Jesus says in Luke 22:25. It says, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. What is power? Power is simply this, your ability to have your will be done. You know, I want this to happen. How can I make it happen? How can I use politics to make it happen? How can I use commerce? How can I use influence? And the real power is in your ability to make others do your will, to move nations and kingdoms with just a flick of your hand, to have servants at your beck and call. And Jesus, of course, says his kingdom won't work that way. But our tempting prostitute does. She rides kings like horses. She uses them to transport her around. These beasts, of course, are figures you'll recognize from Revelation 13. Our sea beast who attacked the church and our land beast who attacked our values. But the temptation here would be especially strong for John's churches. Because do they feel very powerful? Can they make their will happen? No, remember, John is writing this book while he's in exile until he dies. It would be tempting to get a little bit of power, to see this prostitute, to see these kings come up and say, hey, if you want to make it happen, if you want to reach the ends of the earth, we can give you that. Just give us something. Trade a little bit with us. Give us a little bit of what we want. Compromise a little bit, and we will give you power. Some men are lured to destruction by pleasure, and some are lured into temptation by power. But just like the pleasures are temporary, so is the power. Look at 17:14. John is very explicit on this one. He's talking of all these kings and the woman. He says, they will make war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will triumph over them, because he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And he will be accompanied by his called and chosen and faithful ones. These kings, drunk on power, will make war with Jesus. And this is before it even happens. The battle takes place in Revelation 19. We'll get there in a few weeks. But in Revelation 19, we'll see these armies bring all their resources. They'll bring all their power to fight Jesus. And the battle will be over before it begins. Because the prostitute promises temporary power, deceiving power. Some men come to the city for pleasure, some come for power. But why do so many go to the city today? I don't think many of us would admit, oh, I went to the city for pleasure, or I went to the city for power. Maybe you would, but why do so many go to the city? Even us. It's this in 17:15. Then the angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute was seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. What's the third temptation? I call this promise of safety. Promise of safety. It may not be clear here, but that phrase, the waters you saw. Do you see that here? He's not talking about Galveston Bay. I'll let you explore your sermon notes, but the idea of waters here are associated with the serenity and sovereignty of God. Usually the waters that are gathered in calm in Revelation are a God thing. And so the picture here is all these nations are coming to this woman because she can give what God gives. She can give security. She can give hope. She can give the promise of safety. And it's sort of not, I mean, think of the figures we've seen in Revelation. We've seen dragons, we've seen beasts, we've seen demon frogs. And along comes this motherly woman who says, there, I can protect you, I can keep you safe. After all, there's safety in numbers, right? I mean, in John's day, if you had to choose with an advancing army, if you're going to settle down with a small village, only five families, or a city with 500 families, which are you choosing? Safety and numbers. The city provides safety. Now, let's be honest here. Will men lie, cheat, and steal to get power? Some men will. But most men, if you say, I can make you safe, but you just have to cheat a little bit, you just have to lie a little bit, that is very tempting. Put a gun to my head and say, are you a Christian? Absolutely, yes. Easy answer. But if you threaten my wife or my children and then say, are you a Christian? That is a harder question. The temptation, the allure of safety. And so the prostitute tempts, come to the city. When we all stick together, we're safe. But like pleasure and power, it cannot last. In fact, what does it say only a verse later in 17:16? It says, "And the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire." What happens whenever you gather a bunch of criminals together, a bunch of rebels against God together? They commit crimes against each other. They abuse this woman. They tear her down. They defeat her. She doesn't, in fact, make it all the way to Revelation 19. She promises you safety. But can she keep you safe if she's dead? No. There's nothing left but to mourn this woman and come back next week. That's what we'll do. There's a whole chapter mourning and a funeral service for this woman. But for now, what is John teaching? It's a simple message. For John, Babylon is tempting, but it's not lasting. She tempts you with pleasure. She tempts you with power. She tempts you with the promise of safety. Will you trade Jesus for one of those things? I can give it to you. I'm the city. I'm the sweet motherly city. I'll take care of you. And Babylon was very real and alive for John's churches. Commenters today read this passage and they say, what's the actual geography of this city? Is this Rome? Is this Jerusalem? Is this actual Babylon? But no, here's what Babylon was for John's churches. It's like this. Say you're a Christian in first century Smyrna, one of those letters we read earlier. They arrested your pastor. I'm in jail now, okay? Imagine I'm in jail. Some of you like that, some of you don't. All right? They burned your meeting place. This is burned down. It's a smoking ruin. We're on the run. And so you're on the run from Smyrna, and you get to the next city. You arrive at the gates of Ephesus 50 miles away. You see this big city with these big walls, and you will be tempted and say, is it safe here? Will my dreams come true here? Will its golden temple to Aphrodite help keep me safe? Is the city my home? And to these weary Christians who want some relief, some rest, John is teaching Babylon, wherever you find her, is tempting but not lasting. We aren't home yet. This city looks great, but it's not the city from chapter 21. That is our home. Babylon is tempting, but not lasting. Now let us apply this today before we close. First off, Christian, a question for you, don't answer out loud. Why do you go to Babylon? I don't mean the historic site in Iraq over there, but I mean this city of temptation. We all visit the city. We all like to go see the big city for one reason or another. We like to see what the city has to offer. There's something where it checks a box for you. Luke 9:25 says it this way. He warns us, "For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself?" Be honest with yourself. Which temptation keeps bringing you back? Is it pleasure? Is it power? Is it the promise of safety? Something keeps drawing you back. I hope today you're repulsed by your secret temptations. You see how vulgar they are. May you find them disgusting. You would say, I keep looking at this thing and it's awful. I keep doing this thing and it's tearing down my faith. Admit it. You like the city. That's why you go there. Nobody's dragging you to the city. Christian, remember, they will not let you bring your favorite sins to heaven. Do you know what Jesus' warning means? Christian, if you live your life from desire to desire, temptation to temptation, tasting all the delicacies and power and everything that the city offers it. If you live your life saying, I want to be satisfied, I want to be powerful, I want to be safe, I want to be happy, then your faith is shriveling up. Here's what Jesus' warning means. You need to be told no. The city only wants to tell you yes. It comes with a little price, a little trade-off. But you need to be told no. To be told no. Do not take what the world has to offer. It won't get you what you need. Why? Because the world is temporary. So Christian, be honest. Why do you go to Babylon? There is temptation in your life. You go and you visit every day. You may not act on it, but you just go look at it. Oh, the city looks nice, but I won't touch. I won't touch. You crave it. You long for it. Repent. Turn around. Confess that sin to Jesus. Confess to a brother or sister today. Why? Babylon is not your goal. In Revelation, what's the goal? Jesus is the goal. We're not trying to get to Babylon. Next week, we're going to see we want to leave Babylon and go to Jesus. But Christian, today, be honest. Why do you go to Babylon? Why do you visit the city of temptation? Now, as your pastor, I want to apply this to actually to our whole church. You know, First Baptist Yoakum, all of you at once, we're this spiritual thing. Here's our encouragement, First Baptist Yoakum. Wait for your husband. Wait for your husband. What does that mean? Well, I won't be the first preacher to point out this prostitute can actually represent a group of people, just as a city is a group of people. But it can help us think about churches. And for a church, the warning is then, wait for your husband. Because what's true? Churches will prostitute themselves out. They will trade their values for earthly success, for temporary success. And they'll say many reasons, but it comes down to one reason. They are tired of waiting. We look at Jesus, and if you read Revelation, you know he's promised as the husband for the church. And we say, Jesus, you said you'd give us power, but we're tired of waiting. So we're going to get it over here. Jesus, you said you would be with us, but we're tired of waiting. So we're going to go over here. We're tired of waiting. Look at that church over there. Look at them. They don't preach about sin, but look at how nice and shiny their building is. Look at that church over there. They don't preach Christ crucified, but man, their worship concert is loud. But whatever we're tempted by, we trade for temporary results. So First Baptist Yoakum, we must be ready to wait, to be patient. Why? Again, it's the other city. Revelation 21:2 says it this way. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for a husband. First Baptist Yoakum, the waiting is worth it. Our goal is not to make all our dreams come true on earth. Our goal isn't to have material and visible success right now. Our goal is to make it until Jesus comes back, to be faithful until he returns. So I encourage you, wait for your husband. And with that said, I'm going to do something I don't normally do. I'm going to mention something that's very in the news, and it may be obscure for some of you, but it's worth warning because it comes up in this passage. Who here has ever heard of the Seven Mountain Mandate? Have you ever heard of this thing? Okay, it's in the news, it's a political idea, and it comes from this chapter. All right, I'm going to read for you chapter 17, verse 9. It says this, "This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated." And let me just say this, I mean, I think we've explained the passage well enough. Is the woman in this passage a good thing, yes or no? No, all right? Is the beast with all the heads, is that a good thing? Is that, do you want to be on the beast team? No. All right, so it stands to reason, are these mountains a good thing? Is John telling us, everybody get to the mountains, go stand on the mountains? No, these are bad guy stuff. And so out there in the world, there are people that propose the seven mountain mandate. And here's sort of what they say. From Revelation 17, they say the job of the church is to conquer these seven mountains. And you may say, well, what are they? Well, good news. These people say that there's modern day prophets and apostles who can fill in what John forgot. And here's what they say. These mountains are the areas of family, religion, education, media, arts, entertainment, business, and government. And if you've been exposed to that stuff, the Seven Mountain Mandate, we can have a longer conversation. There's some nuance there. But I just want you to see, if you run into this, this Seven Mountain Mandate is not a good reading of Revelation 17. And here's how it connects back to what we were saying about wait for your husband. All these mandates and all this stuff added to Revelation 17 can sort of demean the church or distract us from our actual mission. It makes it to where instead of John telling us, wait for your husband, be faithful to Jesus until he comes back, don't give in to temptation. Now with this mandate, it's sort of saying, and on the way, you got to start a business, you got to start a college and a movie company until Jesus comes back. Which none of those on their own are bad. You know, if you're thinking, Autumn, if you go back to the movie business, that's not a bad thing. But none of those ideas are found in Revelation 17. And certainly none of those ideas would be the point of Revelation. It would be nonsensical for John to tell the churches in the first century, by the way, you need to go start a college. Like, that's just not on their radar in Revelation 17. John's point is the city of Babylon is tempting, and her seven mountains are tempting. But true churches should resist Babylon and faithfully wait for Jesus. So back to where we began. First Baptist Yoakum, wait for your husband. Transforming society isn't our goal. Babylon is going down. The seven mountains aren't our goal. Our goal is to preach the gospel faithfully until Jesus returns. So First Baptist Yoakum, may we wait for our husband, Jesus Christ. And now I'm going to apply this to our non-Christian here today. If you wandered in here, you're like, they are talking about prostitutes and Babylon and beasts. God bless you for sticking around that long. But if you're not a Christian today, here's your message. She's lying to you. She's lying to you. Thank you for being here. I hope our discussion of temptation today has begun to make you question your view of the world, to make you wonder, the world, what I'm being sold, is it true? And I want to be clear, she's lying to you. The world has lied to you. James 4:4 puts it this way, you adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. The world tells you, Babylon tells you, you can have everything you want and more. And what's the truth? Number one, you can't have everything you want. You're not that powerful or important. Or even if you did get everything you wanted, would it satisfy? You know, you get out of here and you say it's Memorial Day weekend. What I really want is to finish this six-pack of Shiner. Question, you know, good for you. After you finish that, is it going to have made all your dreams come true? No, it's not. Or you say, I want to own the biggest ranch in Lavaca County. Good for you. After you go into debt and buy that ranch and then it stops raining, because it will, is that going to actually make your life better? It's just going to shift around the problems in your life. Satisfaction, while it is a lie that things of this world can satisfy you, it's not actually the biggest lie. James makes it clear in what he says back in James 4. Here's the biggest lie. The biggest lie is that you can have everything you want, that you can get what you desire from this world, and you can be a friend of God. The world lies first by saying, I can satisfy. But the second lie is I can make you a friend with God. That's just not true. that you can have your affair on Saturday and have your Jesus on Sunday. That's a lie. That you can get wasted on Friday and then come to prayer breakfast on Saturday. I need to warn you, the world is lying to you. She's lying. I'll make it super plain. Some of you in this room might even call yourself a Christian. And you think of your life this way. You say, I have my work life over here. I have my family life over here. I have my Friday night life over here. I have my fishing buddy life over here. And then on Christmas and Easter, I have my Christian life over here. You're all segmented and chopped up. What does James call that? Enmity with God. In our life, you can't just sprinkle a little bit of God on top and say you're done. Why? Because He's God. You can't just pretend to be a Christian one Sunday a month and call yourself a Christian. I want to warn you, the world is lying to you. The world has been telling you a lie. So what does James prescribe for us? James 4, 8. He says, draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and weep. Turn your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will exalt you. Let's be honest. Some of us are probably sitting through this service, waiting for me to end so that you can get back to sinning. You're already daydreaming about that next time you can give into temptation, planning your next visit to Babylon. She is lying to you. James tells us you need to weep. You need to mourn. You need to come before God and say, I am sorry for believing the lie. Believing that I could live in Babylon and visit heaven. I'm going to stay. This is my temptation is my home. Whenever I feel like it, I'll visit that other place. She's lying to you. Some of you need to ask Jesus, Jesus, bring me to heaven, bring me to your heavenly city, and leave my sins behind. I don't want to go to Babylon anymore. Jesus, I was pretending to be a Christian. I was putting on a good show for my mom or my family, but now I want to give my life to you. Would you ask Jesus, I want you to kill my sin? It says Babylon will be destroyed. I want that to be a good thing. I realize I can't trust Babylon. Why? What is John teaching us? Babylon.